Absolutely. So Brittany and Yolanda are two black moms raising their children who had abortions. Hannah is a Mexican woman, and Nick is a Houston trans person living in Houston, talking about the resistance and the power of trans people having abortions. And I think storytelling is extremely important in this time when we have the president going to the March for Life, denigrating us. We have the Secretary of Education denigrating black people who have abortions. Our voices need to be heard, and we are speaking out that we had abortions. We're making this decision for ourselves, and that's what's most important.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Renee Bracy Sherman, award-winning activist, founder, and executive director of We Testify, executive producer of the new short film, Ours to Tell, which is also produced by Planned Parenthood. You can see the full film at ourstotell.org. And that does it for our first broadcast from Park City, from the Sundance Film Festival. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wells, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura, Tamari Astudio, Adriano Contreras, and Maria Terracena. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, our engineers. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan and Becca Staley. Hugh Grant, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Wow. Okay. Well, now it's 5 o'clock. Maybe a minute or two after, and we are going to continue. This hour of programming is brought to you by the Urbana Park District and the listeners of WEFT. The Urbana Park District is currently looking for people age 15 and older to become certified lifeguards. Since the UPD runs the Urbana Indoor Aquatic Center, lifeguards are needed all year long. Qualifications required include comfort around water, a responsible nature, and the enjoyment of being around other people. That's a lot to ask for. Anyway, also all candidates would need to become certified. Urbana Park District welcomes everyone who is interested in being a lifeguard. For more information, please visit urbanaparks.org/jobs or call 217-367-1536. And now it's 5 o'clock, and this is WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Listen to Democracy Now! Every weekday afternoon on WEFT Community Radio. It's 5 p.m. and this is the WEFT Courier, a daily information service of WEFT. We broadcast Disability Beat every Monday from 5 to 5:30, followed by Food Sleuth Radio from 5:30 to 6. Then at 6 p.m., stay tuned for Where We Are At, a locally produced public affairs program that focuses on news, current events, local, regional, and national politics. Now here is this week's edition of Disability Beat.
Public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a pre-recorded interview with the co-producers of the film When We Walk, Lee and Jason De Silva. But first, disability news for the week of January 27th, 2020. In what's being described as the largest study of its kind, researchers say they've identified more than 100 genes associated with autism. The study, which looked at 35,000 people, including nearly 12,000 on the spectrum, pinpointed 102 genes related to autism. Of those, 49 were also associated with other types of developmental delay. In contrast, only 65 autism-linked genes were known in 2015, according to those behind the new study published online last week in the journal Cell, said Joseph Buxbaum, director of the Seaver Autism Center for Research and Treatment at Mount Sinai and a senior author of the study, quote, This is a landmark study both for its size and for the large international collaborative effort it required. With these identified genes, we can begin to understand what brain changes underlie ASD and begin to consider novel treatment approaches," end quote. Researchers said they were able to analyze inherited genes and those that occur spontaneously when the egg or sperm are formed. They found that genes associated with autism affect the function and development of the brain, both of which can lead to autism. In addition, the genetic sequencing done for the study showed that autism can affect multiple classes of nerve cells. Buxbaum said, quote, "We now have specific, powerful tools that help us understand those underpinnings, and new drugs will be developed based on our newfound understanding of the molecular basis of autism," end quote. A study published last year looking at more than 2 million people around the world estimated that almost 81% of autism risk is hereditary. The U.S. Department of Justice gave its support to an Ohio law last week, currently blocked by a federal judge, that largely bans an abortion after a test shows a fetus likely has Down syndrome. The friend of the court brief filed in front of the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals says the controversial law, quote, "does not prohibit any abortions," end quote, but rather only forbids doctors from participating in an abortion if they know the woman is seeking one because of a Down syndrome diagnosis. The law bans abortions after a prenatal screening or test shows the fetus likely has Down syndrome. Doctors who perform an abortion with knowledge of a possible Down syndrome diagnosis face a fourth-degree felony punishable by up to 18 months in prison and a $5,000 fine. Attorneys for Ohio have argued the law is meant to prevent discrimination against children with a genetic disorder. The law known as House Bill 214 is also called the Anti-Discrimination Law. Governor John Kasich signed the law in December of 2017. A federal judge in Cincinnati blocked the law in 2018 after the American Civil Liberties Union of Ohio sued on behalf of preterm and Planned Parenthood and wrote the law was unconstitutional. A divided panel from the Sixth Circuit upheld the Cincinnati judge's ruling in October. However, the full court will review that ruling and hold oral arguments in March. Ohio does not keep statistics on reasons women seek abortion or whether aborted fetuses had been diagnosed with Down syndrome. Nationally, abortion rates after learning of a possible Down syndrome diagnosis likely range from 50 to 85%, according to a 2012 survey. Federal regulators are seeking to place new limits on service animals in flight in an effort to ensure that such animals really are providing assistance to people with disabilities. The U.S. Department of Transportation issued a proposed rule last week severely limiting the types of service animals that airlines must accommodate. Dogs would be the only type of service animal that must be allowed, and emotional support animals would no longer be considered service animals for the purpose of air travel. The Transportation Department said the plan is, quote, intended to ensure a safe and accessible air transportation system. It addresses concerns raised by individuals with disabilities, airlines, flight attendants, airports, other aviation transportation stakeholders, and other members of the public regarding service animals on aircraft, end quote. Under the plan, airlines could require passengers traveling with service animals to complete forms developed by the Transportation Department attesting that the animal has good behavior, is in good health, and for long flights is trained not to relieve itself or do so in a sanitary manner. Those traveling with service animals may be directed to check in an additional hour ahead of other passengers under this proposal. Meanwhile, airlines could limit passengers with disabilities from bringing more than two service animals, and they could stipulate that such animals fit within the traveler's foot space on the plane. Airlines could not refuse service animals based on breed, but could bar those that display aggressive behavior or pose a health or safety risk, the Transportation Department said. Airlines can require that service animals be harnessed, leashed, or otherwise controlled. And finally, Amtrak is under fire for reportedly telling a group of people with disabilities that it would cost $25,000 for them to travel by train on a route that typically costs just $16 per person. The group, including five wheelchair users, sought to travel together from Chicago to Bloomington, Illinois for an office retreat. All five work at Access Living, a Chicago disability service and advocacy organization. However, the train has just three cars, each of which can accommodate one person in a wheelchair. Amtrak reportedly told the group it would cost $25,000 to remove seats so that the other two members of the party could be accommodated. Officials from Access Living said they had previously made arrangements to be accommodated on similar trips with Amtrak, but were told that the train service nationwide policy had changed, prompting the $25,000 quote. U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois said that Amtrak, quote, must do better and wants a meeting with the train services CEO Richard Anderson. Last Monday, Amtrak seemed to reverse course. They said in a statement, quote, we apologize for their inconvenience as we have been working through how to serve their travel needs. We assured them that as valued customers, we will accommodate all passengers who use wheelchairs aboard the same Amtrak trains they originally requested, end quote. And that's the news for this week.
Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central Monday morning rail. There are 15 cars and 15 restless riders. And 25 sacks of mail. They're all out on the southbound Odyssey, and the train pulls out of Kankakee.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander, and I'm joined today by two guests on the phone, Jason DeSilva and Lee DeSilva, who are brothers and also co-producers and collaborators on a film that is debuting this week in New York City at the Human Rights Watch Film Festival. So we're here today to learn more about the film When We Walk and a little bit of history of the De Silva brothers. So welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Hi, how are you doing?
So why don't we start by each of you introducing yourselves and talking about how you got into, maybe together, talking about how you worked through the production of this film and what your hopes are for it. It sounds like a pretty interesting project, and so I'm really looking to learn a little bit about it. So Jason, why don't you start?
Yeah, I can go ahead and start. So this is a follow-up film to a previous film, When I Walk, which was I think it's first premiered in 2013, and it did a lot. It was in Sundance, it won an Emmy Award, it was on TBS POV, and it really looked at my disability. So I have primary progressive multiple sclerosis, and I was a filmmaker for a while before, and I turned the camera on myself and told my own story. And this film is a follow-up to that, so it's called When We Walk.
Okay. I have a million questions about that, but we'll come back to it. Let's Lee introduce himself, and then we'll...
Hi, yeah, I'm Lee DeSilva, Jason's youngest brother, actually. And I've been working alongside him in a producing capacity for, I guess it's over 10 years now, starting with actually the short version of his first film, When I Walk, and then some other projects in between and some other technology projects as part of the nonprofit, as well as When We Walk. Have a business background and a technology background. So, just making sure, Jason is on track with what he's doing and kind of being quality control. And, yeah, I think we've worked together over the last decade and kind of having the same vision. So I think we've just been continuing to work together on multiple projects here. Mm-hmm. And I guess the success of Jason's work has kind of allowed us to continue on in the kind of brotherly producing capacity.
Yeah, it's great to work with family in that capacity, I'm sure. So let's talk first about the first movie, the one that you won the Emmy for. Is that right?
Yeah, Emmy Award. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was called When I Walk. What was the gist of that? Jason, if you're trying to talk, your signal is not coming across very well.
So, really, go ahead, Lee. You can take it from there.
Yeah, so When I Walk was actually, it was part of Jason's actually master's thesis, was a short film of it where he turned the camera on himself after being diagnosed with primary progressive multiple sclerosis, and it followed, I want to say, about 7 years of his life just turning the camera on himself and kind of just, you know, peeling back the curtain of more than just one person's fight against this debilitating disability, but more of a you know, global problem of people with disabilities and the kind of rights they have and the technology they have and just being able to be active in your community.
Bond.
So it's, yeah, Jason, you want to continue on?
Yeah, so can you hear me okay now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so really it's, the best way to say it is like in the same way Michael Moore, Morgan Spurlock, put themselves into their own film, I'm putting me in my own film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's specifically confronting my life with a disability. So that's what When I Walk really is. It's like the first of its kind film that really I turned the camera on myself and focused on my disability and how I would continue living with that.
So you say it took about 7 years to do that. At what point after your diagnosis with MS did you decide to take this on as a project?
2 years. It took me a massive 2 years to gain enough courage to actually get up and pick up the camera and flip it around and turn it on myself. I tried everything under the sun. I went to grad school. I wanted to make other films by other people. And then finally, I was just like, I need to stop distracting myself. I need to just like confront what I'm going through with the camera. And turn the camera on myself and made When I Walk.
And is there a place that we can see this film?
Yeah, so When I Walk is available. You could find it lots of places. It got wide distribution. It's available on Amazon Prime. You find it on YouTube. It was on PBS POV for its national broadcast. It was the opening film for PBS POV in its 2014 season.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the opening film. It got New York Times critics pick. So really, it did really well for itself, and this new film, When We Walk, is just following that same trajectory.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about When You Walk. So the title's slightly different. Is there a different focus?
Well, that you said the exact phrase, so When I Walk versus When We Walk. So the changes are that the term I, which is the we, the reason for that is that it's a film not just about me now, but it's about me and my son as well. So it's looking at, not just looking at my own struggles, but it's looking at being a father with a disability and the we term in that. So looking at my story, but with my son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the story is that my son has just moved by his mother to Texas. So I'm living in New York, and all the challenges that have been around since then, just with the disability, but really uncovering and unpacking the challenges around being a person with a disability, wanting to be close to a son who lives 1,800 miles away. So what would it be like for me to go to Texas and really look deeply into Medicaid? So I'm on Medicaid, but we're in New York, I receive 20 support, 7 care.
Mm-hmm.
Moving to Texas would greatly diminish what I could receive. My only option would be to live in a nursing home. And I found out we could kill myself. So I had that hard choice. In order to move to Texas, I would have to live in a nursing home. And I spoiled, I decided to live in New York and get my sign
We're losing your signal again, Jason.
Can you take that?
Yeah, I think you answer that question pretty well, and I think it's just it's about a story of a father's love letter to his son. And I mean, I'm personally and intimately involved in this too, because it's my nephew as well. So I think it's something greater than just Jason to his son, but I think it's a good it's imagery for like any father that wants to be closer to his son through extenuating circumstances.
The thing that strikes me about this is that I'm guessing that until your diagnosis with MS, you know, years ago, that maybe you didn't have a real connection to the world of disability and the struggles that people have dealing with Medicaid and all the rules governing how people can use their resources. How has your perspective changed over the years?
Well, I was kind of blindsided, especially when we can't discuss. I was completely blindsided by the fact that the same level of care, and moving to the same place that my own son lives, I could not even be around my son and get the same level of care. Falls under, there's a law that is in lobbying right now, the Disability Integration Act. And the potential long-term could find a solution to this happening. And that's a law where people can live in any state that they choose and they have the same level of care. The problem is...
Yes.
For me?
We're fading again.
I'm sorry. The problem is that Medicaid is a state-based program, but Medicare is a federal program.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody on Medicaid, the only way that they'd be able to travel from state to state is if the federal government kicks in and it then becomes a national program, or if they could top up the state-based programs, because right now it's preventing people with the freedoms that they want to go where they want to go. It's really keeping people with disabilities in the borders of their own state.
Right, and you know, it may just get worse, because
yeah,
with the block grants that are being proposed, you know, that the feds are just going to send money to the states and let them manage their own. That's going to make it a nightmare, wouldn't you think?
Yep, exactly. It's a really scary time. I'm so glad you're doing this show, because for people with disabilities, that things are changing and they're not getting better. They're getting better in some ways, but overall, it's a really scary time right now.
Yeah, it really is. So yeah. What's your hope for this film and the impact that it may potentially have on disability world?
Yeah, so thanks. So the things. One, as Lee said, it's a love letter to my son. So it's a way for my son to know about me and to know that his father wants to stay close to him. But two, my hope is that it's a tool for lobbying for change for things like the Disability Integration Act to be noticed and to be used to make it easier for people with disabilities. And something like my situation that happened to me, where a father is separated from his son, so families should not be separated because of their disability. And I hope that happens to nobody in the future. And my hope is that my film can help lobby for that.
Yeah. So just so the people who are listening who maybe don't understand the struggle of moving from, you said you're in New York currently?
Yes.
And your son is in Texas. So what would be the outcome if you decided you were going to just pick up and go to Texas to live?
It's funny that you asked that. I was literally on the phone with some case managers today that live in Texas that said, well, we have done the research and there's no way you want to come to Texas because you will get nothing like what you have now, which is 24/7 care in home, in your own place. The only thing that we have is a small amount of hours. So it would be up, in my film, I say it's like up to 41 hours per week of care. And otherwise, you are in. Sorry, I used the word sentence, but you were sentenced to a nursing home. So you would be in a nursing home, and they would control your day-to-day. And so, in essence, that means I wouldn't be able to pursue the career that I have. I wouldn't be able to really get around and even leave my apartment.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're in a nursing home, they don't have staff that's going to be, you know, one-on-one to accompany you anywhere.
No, no way. No, there's no way that happens. So I guess I count the blessings that I have because I do have a son. He's not with me right now, but he is living in Texas with his mother. But it's nice that he's thriving, he's doing well, and I count my blessings that I have the care that I would like to have here in New York.
Absolutely. Lee, how has this changed your life, being a part of this story as Jason's brother?
Yeah, I mean, I think over the last decade, I think someone close to him as well as his family, we've seen his, you know, his independence has been kind of dwindling over time, where we kind of have to come in and fill the gaps to make sure he's able to do the great work that he does. I mean, when he was younger and he was doing filmmaking, he was kind of a one-man show. And then moving into When I Walk, it was a bigger scale of a project, so had some people come in and help him, but, you know, still able to remain in control of most things. And I think the biggest thing I've seen with When We Walk is, you know, filling the gaps for things that he wouldn't be able to do anymore, but, you know, compared to When I Walk, things like, you know, he has an editor work much closely with him because it's harder for him to see, or just have more care aides on site if he's doing, you know, media appearances, making sure that he has enough people helping him out with the cameras and sound design. So I think it's definitely, as he goes from this one-man show to his later films, his team grows, and I think the more time we spend trying to make sure he has access to the programs he needs, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, care aids, or even, you know, production tools that help him still be creative and still create the content that he wants, I think is the biggest thing that I've noticed for sure.
I got we're running like so many different things. So, like, there is my care, there is the film, there is the overall nonprofit that I run called Access Lab, and then there's a a mapping project that we're working on called Access Maps, or AXSMAP.com. And all these things combined, it's a lot of work for one person to take on, but for me and Lee and all our family to take on, it's just pretty amazing that I've come this far and that we've come this far.
So